It's up! Church, Jake, you were Anna Kasparian with you guys. Look, we've got the usual stuff, updates on Israel. They're, you know, usually unfortunate and mixed, a little bit mixed today. And then we've got national politics. We got Donald Trump on nice countries. What did he mean by that? Executing babies. Lots of fun discussions here today on TYT as usual. And are young people more misinformed or not? It's a Bill Maher conversation we'll pick up. And are, as we are heading into the show already, Og182, Robert Huxley 1, Liam TYT, all made contributions. And Robert, that was awfully generous. Bless your heart. Okay, love it. We need 100,000 members and $1 million by the end of the year to stay in business, unlike everybody else in this industry. You are our foundation and our pillars, so we appreciate you guys. TYT.com/team to do either a contribution or join. That'd be great. Thank you, guys. All right, Anna.
Well, we begin with Ben Shapiro, something that we rarely do on the show, but he recently went on a rant on his program that really made this topic worthy of discussion at the very top. So without further ado, here's Ben Shapiro for you.
This is not anymore about the seven men and women of World Central Kitchen that perish on this unfortunate event. This is happening way for too long. It's been 6 months of targeting anything that seems moves. This doesn't seem a war against terror. This doesn't seem anymore a war about defending Israel. This really, at this point, seems it's a war against humanity itself.
Okay, that is a lie, and it's a disgusting lie.
On today's episode of Ben Shapiro's show, he ranted at length about the international response to the IDF and its military operations, including the three separate drone strikes the IDF carried out that led to the killing of seven World Central Kitchen workers. Now, interestingly enough, Ben Shapiro feels that Chef Jose Andres is a radical here for what he had to say during a sit-down interview with ABC News over the weekend. Keep in mind that he's discussing his colleagues, people that he knew personally, getting killed by the IDF, even though they had coordinated their exact location with the IDF. Even though the IDF knew exactly where they were, even though there was no indication that there was anything wrong with what they were doing, everything was above board. But they were killed in three separate drone strikes anyway. Important to know that context before we get to more of what he had to say. But before we do, Cenk, what is it with Ben? Is it just this intense bias that he has?
Oh, 100%.
So biased that he's unable to see straight in regard to what the IDF has done and what the Israeli government has even taken responsibility for.
Yeah, so I'll agree with him about one thing that he said about Jose Andres a little bit later as we go through the story. But to your main question, Anna, 45,000 buildings destroyed in Khan Yunis alone. That's just one city in Gaza. 55% of the buildings there, the human rights groups are calling it unlivable city. And Ben Shapiro wants you to believe that all of that was just targeting terrorists, destroying 55% of the buildings in a city just to target militants. Okay, I mean, you could believe that if you're the most gullible person, and I'm being polite here, in the world, but no one else on planet Earth believes that. They're obviously leveling the place and destroying Gaza on purpose. And, you know, Ben can do all he wants, and why is he doing it? Obviously, massive out of control bias.
Now, Shapiro took particular issue with Andres referring to Israel's genocidal campaign in Gaza, to be quite frank, as a war against humanity. Let's listen to how Shapiro responded and reacted to that.
So Chef Jose Andres is the head of the World Central Kitchen when he is not doing his chefing. The World Central Kitchen does a lot of good work in bringing food into very hard hit areas in terms of war. Also, he is a political radical. He's been a political radical for quite a while. Those two things are not in particular contradiction. You can do good things and you can do bad things. Life is filled with these sorts of things. He went on national TV and he suggested that what Israel is doing is a war against humanity itself, which is an incredibly vicious proposition. It is not true that Israel is in a war with, quote unquote, humanity itself. Were it war with humanity itself, the World Central Kitchen never would have been coordinating with the Israeli Defense Forces in the first place. In any case, here's Chef Jose Andres, who again is a political radical on the left.
Fascinating admission there. Fascinating admission by Shapiro, where he made abundantly clear that he is aware that the World Central Kitchen was coordinating with the IDF, meaning that the IDF knew exactly where those humanitarian aid workers were, knew exactly how to target them, and in fact did target them, not with one drone strike, not with two drone strikes, but with three separate drone strikes. Remember, that convoy of humanitarian aid trucks included three trucks. They first hit the first truck, and then as those people were basically slaughtered through that drone strike, they attacked the second one and then the third one, ensuring that everyone that was in that convoy was slaughtered. Okay, seven individuals, three of them from the UK, one of them a dual US Canadian citizen. You had a Polish individual included as well, and a Palestinian driver, all of them slaughtered, gone. And the IDF claimed, well, we thought we had a hint that maybe, just maybe, Cenk, there was one armed terrorist with them. And even though we didn't have any real solid intel, we decided to slaughter all of them anyway. And yeah. Was there an armed terrorist with them? No. Nope.
Yeah, so let's look at the layers of that. First of all, you should shame any reporter that reports that as an accident. Even the IDF admits it's not an accident. There's a difference between an accident and a mistake. They meant to hit the convoy. They say that their rationale was that there was a Palestinian on board and he was male. So by IDF definition, he's a terrorist. Oops, it turns out he's not a terrorist. But did they intend to hit the convoy? Yes, absolutely. So number one, they're saying, yeah, we'll kill aid workers from across that have come from across the world. We'll murder you guys if we think you're with a Palestinian male. Okay, so that means you've admitted that you're terrorists. Period. You're saying I'm intentionally murdering civilians because I think they're next to a guy I want to hit. So even if they were right that the guy was theoretically a terrorist that the World Central Kitchen didn't know about, you're still saying, yes, I would like to murder these people that are next to you.
But that's not a radical position. Jose Andres, who has lost people close to him, colleagues that he knew in person, okay, personally, he's the radical for speaking out against what happened to those international humanitarian aid workers. But Ben's not a radical. Ben's not a radical considering the high volume of civilians that have been killed in Gaza. Something that he doesn't really care much about, still supports Israel's military operations because again, his bias takes precedent, takes priority over human lives as long as it's Israel carrying out the slaughter.
Yeah,
so who's the radical? I want to know who the radical is.
Yeah, I don't think that's even an open question. I mean, look, but you guys can decide on your own because some of you that have the same biases as Ben does for a lot of different reasons. And so you'll look at that and go, now look, let me do the second layer first and then you guys be the judge. Okay, the second layer was, well, we're not really sure that it's a terrorist. We just know that it's a male Palestinian. And generally speaking, all male Palestinians that the IDF kills in Gaza, they declare posthumously to be terrorists.
Exactly.
That's how they get to the outlandish 13,000 number, which isn't anywhere near rooted in reality.
And that's based on reporting by Haaretz, okay? That's not based on us just guessing. We're not just saying it. This is based on reporting by an Israeli publication called Haaretz, which we'll get to in a moment.
So in that case, it turns out, as usual, they were not at all sure that he was a terrorist or a militant or anything. And they decided, what the heck, let's murder everybody on board just in case. Okay, so you guys tell me, what's the radical position? Some of you that are as biased as Ben will say, yeah, no, the radical position is saying not murdering them. Of course you murder them. And then find out later if you got it right or wrong. Who cares? We already murdered 33,000 of them. We're starving a million of them. What part of this was unclear? But they had it coming. Hamas is making us starve them. Hamas is making us kill World Central Kitchen workers, etc. Yeah, but the rest of you, I imagine, which is about 98% of the world at this point, goes, no, they're obviously committing acts of terrorism when you murder civilians on purpose based on the flimsiest evidence or no evidence, or even if it was one terrorist, you don't care at all that you're killing the other people.
Yeah.
Well, then that means you are a radical who thinks that murder is perfectly fine as long as you're killing Palestinians or anyone within the vicinity of a Palestinian.
See, what Ben doesn't realize is that his side of this argument has gotten far too cocky. And what I mean by that is, look, I get it. At least here in the United States, you have government officials, members of the media who have done a fantastic job. They've really succeeded in dehumanizing the Palestinian people to the point where, I mean, tens of thousands of them will get slaughtered. And there's still a debate about whether the military conduct of the IDF is okay. But once the IDF starts killing international humanitarian aid workers, including an American citizen, oh, suddenly that strategy of dehumanizing people doesn't work. It's not as effective. And people start waking up to the reality on the ground in Gaza. And he's furious about people speaking out, including Jose Andres, who, if I were him, I'm not even him, and I'm furious about what has happened, right? Because I care about human lives. That includes human lives on the Israeli side. We were furious after the atrocities that Hamas committed on October 7th happened. Okay, and I'm furious as we report this story day after day of Palestinian civilians getting slaughtered in Gaza. Let's go to the next video because there's more insanity from Ben Shapiro on this issue.
If it were war against humanity itself, Israel, as I've said 1,000 times, has complete air superiority over the Gaza Strip. They could have just killed literally hundreds of thousands of people. Even according to Hamas statistics, which are largely falsified, Israel has killed somewhere in the neighborhood of 32,000 people. According to Israeli statistics, that includes at least 13,000 terrorists. And one of the things about being a terrorist in the Gaza Strip is that many of the people who are considered non-terrorists are 18-year-old men who put down a gun for 5 minutes. And now they're non-terrorists, and then they pick up the gun, and now they're terrorists again. What happened with the World Central Kitchen is indeed a tragedy. Israel has not only acknowledged that, Israel has fired the officers who were in charge, despite the confusion about what actually happened. By the way, the Jerusalem Post did have a report about what actually happened with the World Central Kitchen. It turns out that war zones are really dangerous, and you don't have perfect knowledge of what's going on at any given time.
No, the IDF didn't have perfect knowledge, even though the World Central Kitchen was coordinating with the IDF to ensure that the IDF knew exactly where they were. Even though they were in an area, they were traveling in an area that was supposed to be safe. But we're going to pretend like the IDF had no idea. They were confused. They weren't confused. They have even admitted that this was intentional, okay? Again, one drone strike, maybe Ben could get away with his fiction, right? With his lies here. Two drone strikes, three drone strikes, how are you gonna still sit there and spout these lies and think you can get away with it? And by the way, Ben, I mean, I would urge you to update your numbers because he noted that 13,000 Hamas militants were killed, right? Except that's not what the IDF is saying. Let's go to the first graphic here. This is according to reporting by an Israeli publication, Haaretz. The Israeli army says 9,000 terrorists have been killed since the Gaza war began. Defense officials and soldiers, however, tell Haaretz that these are often civilians whose only crime was to cross an invisible line drawn by the IDF. So tell me, Shapiro, whose numbers are fictitious here? Let me keep going. In every combat zone, commanders define such kill zones. Says a reserve officer that Haaretz spoke to, this means clear red lines that no one who is not from the IDF may cross so that our forces in the area are not hit. The boundaries of these kill zones are not determined in advance, meaning that Palestinian civilians don't know they exist and they might unwittingly walk into a so-called kill zone or combat zone and they get killed immediately. As soon as people enter it, this reserve officer said, mainly adult males, orders are to shoot and kill even if that person is unarmed, says the reserve officer. One more graphic for you. In practice, a terrorist is anyone the IDF has killed in the areas in which its forces operate, says a reserve officer who has served in Gaza. So the number that Shapiro provided, the 13,000 Hamas militants who have been killed, was already inflated, okay, according to the IDF itself. And then even that 9,000 figure is inflated by the IDF because they just label any adult male they kill as a Hamas militant.
Yeah, so there's some numbers that are inescapable. So 33,000 are dead, confirmed by the Associated Press and every other news organization. 23,000 of them are women and children. That's why you notice Ben Shapiro saying there, are kids really kids? I mean, how do we know if they didn't pick up a gun at some point in their lives? By the way, if you use that standard in America, what would happen then? You saw Lauren Boebert and several other Republican congressmen do photo shoots during Christmas with all their kids carrying AR-15s. According to the Shapiro standard, they should have all been murdered by the IDF, because if you pick up a gun when you're a kid, at any point, you're a terrorist, okay? So now, of course, that's not true, and he made up that they have guns. There's very little guns in Gaza, and so basically, it's all a way of saying, yeah, we murdered a lot of kids, but so are they really kids if they're Palestinians? Now, whenever this stuff happens, I want you to always think in both sides, flip it and see if you're comfortable with it. So if Hamas had killed 33,000 Israelis already, I mean, look at the damage that's been done after 1,200 were killed. Imagine if they killed 33,000 Israelis and they would not stop and they kept killing and killing and killing. And 23,000 of those were women and children. And then the Hamas said, yeah, but so what? I bet those kids were guilty at some point. Everyone would say that's the most outrageous, horrible, terrorist statement I've ever heard.
We'd have troops on the ground by now.
Yeah, we would.
The US would have troops on the ground fighting Hamas as we speak. That is what would happen.
Yeah, so more on the numbers real quick. 13,000, then IDF says, yeah, just kidding, 9,000. Oh, okay, so you were lying about the 13,000, and that's not stopped Ben Shapiro and almost every other right-wing media outlet from continuing the lie of 13,000, even though the IDF admits they were lying. And then you add in the kill zones that Anna talked about. And by the way, you've already seen what a kill zone looks like. That's why they killed the three hostages that had no shirt and the white flag.
Israelis.
They're Israeli hostages, because they were in a kill zone. So the order in a kill zone is murder everyone in the zone, and then later call them terrorists. I don't know if those three Israeli hostages are part of the 9,000 count, because they were killed in a kill zone. So I guess by IDF definition, those Israeli hostages were terrorists. Okay, so this is insanity and totally indefensible. The one tiny thing about Jose Andres that Shapiro said in the whole long segment that I agreed with was he said he has a lot of power in Washington. That's true. He has the top restaurants in Washington, and the people in DC are unbearable and they care about things like that. But is it true that Jose Andres, because of his restaurants, is flipping all of Washington? Of course not. That's insanity. The whole world is saying, are you guys nuts? And finally, did you notice what he bragged about? Well, if we wanted to murder everyone in Gaza, we could. Oh, so it's not a Holocaust. It's only a genocide. That's gotta be the lowest bar in history. Well, we didn't do a Holocaust against them. We didn't try to murder every single Palestinian in the world. We just did a genocide where we killed tons of Palestinians based on the fact that they were Palestinians, and we did ethnic cleansing, and we destroyed where they live. And so you should give us credit for only doing a genocide. Yeah, no deal.
Yeah, I mean, there's a possibility that Israel didn't want to lose its moral high ground immediately. They would prefer to do it slowly, torturously, painfully. And they're getting there. I mean, they've been there already for people who've been paying close attention to how the IDF has carried out this war. But the international community and an increasing percentage of Americans are waking up to what's happening. And Ben doesn't know how to spin the story anymore, despite the fact that most people know the facts about what happened in those three drone strikes that killed 7 humanitarian aid workers. So we're not done with this story quite yet. After we come back from the break, we have some updates on the IDF allegedly withdrawing from Gaza. But don't get too excited. There's a massive catch to that story. So we'll get to that and more when we come back. Don't miss it.
I am scary. I am threatening.
I'm Darth Vader.
All right, back on TYT, and you guys better watch out, because it's Cenk Uygur, Anna Kasparian, plus Anna's Tommy gun and nuke. So those are the two handles that just joined by hitting the join button below.
You know what's gonna happen now, right? All right, I believe you, but my Tommy gun don't. Home Alone.
Yes.
It's one of my favorite parts.
And it's an ideological Tommy gun.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Just to be clear. And no, we don't actually have nukes, just in case you're a right winger and can't tell. Okay.
Are Tommy guns even a, they're not a thing anymore, right?
No, they're not.
Yeah.
They're the ones that had like the circular thing.
Yeah.
Although I'm sure some old school folks who are gun connoisseurs have them. All right, what's next?
Well, we have an update on Gaza and some news about the IDF withdrawing troops from the Gaza Strip. Let's get to it.
More than 33,000 have been killed in Gaza. Meanwhile, significant developments on the battlefield. Tanks on the move as the Israeli military announced that it will withdraw its ground forces from southern Gaza. The remaining IDF troop presence is now tasked with holding the northern half of the strip. For Palestinians now returning to their homes, there is shock at the extent of the destruction, like here in Khan Yunis.
Well, that footage certainly shows the surgical military operations and airstrikes that the Israeli military has been carrying out in Gaza. Obviously, I'm being sarcastic. And if you are at all relieved to hear that the IDF is withdrawing troops from the Gaza Strip, there's a major catch, which you're about to hear about from John Kirby.
It is really just about rest and refit for these troops that have been on the ground for 4 months, and not necessarily, that we can tell, indicative of some coming new operation for these troops. They've been on the ground for 4 months. The word we're getting is they're tired. They need to be refit.
The IDF troops are tired. They need a little bit of a break. They need to be refit. They need to stock up on their weaponry. And far-right ministers Itamar Ben-Gvir and Bezalel Smotrich, I mean, they're even further right compared to Benjamin Netanyahu, are furious that the troops are withdrawing, obviously temporarily, in order to get some rest. They're furious with Netanyahu scaling back the troops in Gaza, even though, again, the IDF soldiers are going to go back to Gaza and continue their assault after they get the break that they so desperately need. Now, also keep in mind that there is one group of soldiers who will remain in Gaza, and that brigade has a couple thousand soldiers. So it's not a complete withdrawal, and of the troops that do withdraw, they will return to continue their military operations. Netanyahu is also salivating over the impending IDF assault on Rafah, despite President Joe Biden's demands that they not carry out those military operations, considering that there are more than a million displaced Palestinians in that tiny, tiny area of land. Rafah shelters some 1.4 million people, more than half of Gaza's population. The prospect of an offensive has raised global alarm. Nonetheless, though, Netanyahu has released a video today on X indicating that they have settled on a specific date to do their invasion into Rafah, although he didn't specify what that date was for the public.
Yeah, so they're having a real problem here in terms of figuring out what they're going to do in the Israeli cabinet. There's a couple of opposing forces. Benny Gantz is on the more moderate side of that cabinet, and he has in the past threatened that if they go into Rafah in the scale that Netanyahu wants, that he might withdraw from the cabinet. Now you got Smotrich and Ben-Gvir saying that they might withdraw from the cabinet if Netanyahu is not monstrous in killing enough Palestinians in Rafah. So now Netanyahu's in a bind. So now Biden could break the tie by saying, hey, listen, you guys aren't getting it. You're gonna lose your funding, etc. if you go into Rafah. When I said red line, I meant red line. And when I said consequences and ceasefire, I meant it, right? Now, of course, Biden didn't mean any of those things, and Netanyahu knows that. So that's why Netanyahu now comes up back and goes, no, 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 you're misunderstanding what I'm saying. We're going into Rafah. I'm with the monsters, Smotrich and Ben-Gvir, and Biden can go walk, take a long walk off a short dock. I could care less what that loser thinks, just like we told you he would say, and that's what he is saying. So we're gonna give you details on that, but already other cities have been leveled. As I told you in the earlier segment, 45,000 buildings destroyed in Khan Yunis, which is in southern Gaza. Now Netanyahu's saying, hey, why don't they go back there? People have started to go back there. 55% of the buildings are destroyed. They're like, well, where are we supposed to stay?
Yeah.
I think the height of the humanitarian catastrophe in Gaza is still not quite understood by the world, as Netanyahu promises to do even more damage.
Well, let me attempt to help people understand if they're having difficulty understanding, because some Palestinians did try to go back to their homes in Khan Yunis, and what they found was absolute devastation. So let's take a look at this footage as I explain what some of these Palestinians have experienced as they went back to Khan Yunis. So IDF troops began their operations in Khan Yunis back in December. But the Palestinians who have returned don't recognize the city because it's been leveled by the IDF. Okay, so buildings were either completely leveled or, as you can see in the footage, just very badly damaged. Paved roads have been bulldozed. Schools and hospitals are either destroyed or gone entirely. And so I want to give you some comments from the Palestinians who spoke to the Associated Press about what they experienced, including Mahmoud Abdel Ghani, who fled Khan Yunis back in December, and he told the Associated Press the following. Many areas, especially the city center, have become unfit for life. I mean, we just saw the footage, it's obviously true. He also says, I found that my house and my neighbor's houses turned to rubble. Basel Abu Nasser, a Khan Yunis resident who fled after an airstrike hit his home in January, said much of the city turned into rubble. There is no sense of life there, the 37-year-old father of two children said. They left nothing there. And so this is what Palestinians are dealing with. Even if the IDF completely withdraws from Gaza and they don't continue any military operations, there is nothing left in the Gaza Strip. There is no life left for the Palestinians to live. Their hospitals destroyed, their schools destroyed, refugee camps destroyed, homes, residential buildings destroyed. Water, infrastructure to get food and water to people destroyed. And I'm supposed to sit here and pretend as though the IDF did surgical strikes to take out Hamas specifically?
And by the way, a lot of people in the press do pretend that, and it is shocking.
Yeah, we don't do pretending here.
Yeah, and so look guys, to give you again more sense of the devastation, Ben-Gvir and Smotrich, who are in the cabinet as we explained, have said in essence that they are in favor of ethnic cleansing. They have talked about driving the Palestinians out of Gaza entirely and into the Sinai Desert where they'll be relocated. That's the definition of ethnic cleansing. And so it is not an accident that they've leveled all of Gaza. They want to make Gaza unlivable so that they can say, we were in the middle of a war, what could we do? We murdered tens of thousands of them, by accident because Hamas made us do it. Plus there's nothing to go back to, I guess like you gotta move them to another country. And this is beautiful waterfront property, as Jared Kushner said, in Gaza, it's now ours. And by the way, God told us a couple thousand years ago that it was ours, so that it's all good, we're all good. And Netanyahu is firmly on that side. He is not on the Benny Gantz side, and he's the one that has ordered all of the killings, all of the murder, all of the bombings and the death and destruction in Gaza. He's one of the biggest terrorists of my lifetime. If you think that they're not, that they really, you saw the footage. If you genuinely think that that was all targeting terrorists, then you think that the great majority of the Palestinians, 2.1 million Palestinians in Gaza, are terrorists. You know what that makes you? An unbelievable racist, an unbelievable bigot, and a terrible person who says, I don't care, kill them, kill them, kill them. I bet they're all terrorists anyway. Destroy 55% of their buildings and then pretend you're hitting just terrorists. No one in their right mind believes that. And so Biden is pretending to believe it. What a joke he is. And here we go again with Netanyahu completely ignoring him and slapping him across the face.
Listen, I'm not entirely sure Biden knows what day it is or where he's at, what location he's at the very moment. So I'm just gonna put that out there. It seems like John Kirby has a lot more control over Biden's foreign policy than Biden does. Because Biden will say something and then John Kirby will hold a press conference where he immediately rebuts anything that Biden has to say, including Biden's alleged red line in regard to Israel invading Rafah. But I wanted to give you some updates on alleged peace negotiations because Egypt said that it is preparing to host a new round of talks aimed at reaching a ceasefire and a hostage deal. And the hostages absolutely should be returned. There should be no question about that. But there should be a permanent ceasefire, which is what Hamas is demanding. Now, Hamas leaders issued a statement saying they met with an Egyptian official in Cairo on Sunday and reiterated their position that no hostages will be freed until Israel agrees to a permanent ceasefire and removes all its troops from Gaza. But remember, Israel doesn't want a permanent ceasefire, especially Benjamin Netanyahu, who knows that the second the war is over, then he has to deal with political consequences, considering the Israeli people absolutely despise him and want to oust him from office. And they also don't agree to, you know, withdrawing Israeli troops from the Gaza Strip permanently. They think that the Gaza Strip now needs to be permanently occupied in order to maintain security. Netanyahu, at the start of his weekly cabinet meeting, said Hamas's extreme demands were the obstacle. Apparently, it's an extreme demand to have a permanent ceasefire in place.
Yeah, so let me explain that. When the media and Joe Biden, if you remember, he was eating the ice cream. He was on Seth Meyers' show and he was talking about, oh yeah, ceasefire coming up on Monday. And I told you, oh, that's because the Michigan primary is about to happen. There is no ceasefire. He's lying. And guess who was right? That ceasefire never happened. Joe Biden was full of crap. He was just trying to trick you into getting your votes. So, what's the reality of the ceasefire? I said at the time, I don't get it. Why would Hamas agree to a ceasefire where they get basically a month off, which Israel wanted to rest their troops for a month anyway, and they decided that they're gonna go rest them now. They say, we are definitely invading Rafah, so our withdrawing of some troops here is just to get them some well-earned rest. I mean, they've been busy killing Palestinians. And you can work up a sweat. I mean, we have an enormous military. They have almost nothing. But to destroy all their buildings and to kill 33,000 people, that takes a lot of effort. So we're giving them a little bit of rest here. But we're going to come back and kill the people in Rafah. So Hamas says, well, we'll agree to release the hostages if we have a real ceasefire and this war is over, permanent ceasefire. Okay, then that makes sense. But if I give you all the hostages now and you take a month long vacation and come back and obliterate Rafah, well, I have no leverage left. Now, I might hate Hamas and you might hate Hamas, but you have to see, hey, when I'm negotiating, who's on the other side and what's their incentives and disincentives? And Hamas is saying, if I give you all these guys, Netanyahu is saying he's gonna murder all of us anyway. Hamas and the Palestinian civilians. So why the hell would I give you the hostages? Now, I want the hostages back. Here, for all the idiots who say, have you demanded that Hamas return them? I demand it. Did that work? Come on, how can anybody be that dumb? You have to figure out, how do you get the hostages back? How? You can't say, oh yeah, give it to me. I'll give you a lunch break. Lunch break, ceasefire. And then I'm back to killing all of you. And I demand all the hostages. That's a preposterous demand. So of course, you're not gonna get a ceasefire. So right now, this thing's a disaster. He's gonna go back into Rafah. And by the way, the million people are starving. And now more and more press reporting, yeah, the deaths have begun. We showed you some earlier. Now it's getting to be much more deaths in northern Gaza as people starve to death. So meanwhile, John Kirby is the Baghdad Bob of this war.
Yep.
Just going there, going, oh yeah, I don't see any homicides. I don't see any killings. I don't see any genocide. I think Israel's great. And we can't wait to rush them more weapons. And Shep Biden's a loser. Nothing he said makes sense. He's a senile old fool. The official policy of the deep state is we support Israel no matter how many people they kill. Okay, that's what I thought, John.
The best way to see what the United States is thinking about this ongoing war is to just listen to what John Kirby has to say during his pressers. Just absolute disgraceful commentary and denial of the reality on the ground in Gaza. So it doesn't really matter what Biden has to say, right? I do think Biden wants to have his cake and eat it too. He sees that young voters that he so desperately needs, Muslim voters, Arab American voters that he so desperately needs, especially in swing states like Michigan, have turned their backs on Biden. So he, you know, provide some rhetoric to maybe alleviate their concerns. Obviously, it's not working because people weren't born yesterday and they see what's currently happening and what continues to happen in Gaza. But, you know, the actions speak louder than words. When it comes to John Kirby, he's pretty open and honest about where the US stands on Israel and the IDF's assault on Palestinians in Gaza. And, you know, Biden might lie to us and tell us what he thinks we want to hear, but what the government carries out is the antithesis of what Biden claims. right? So it's gonna keep going.
I have mainstream Democratic friends who watch TV and they genuinely believe that Biden's words matter.
Well, they're suckers. Sorry to your friends.
So my point is, until Biden takes $1 that away from Israel that we were gonna send them, then I don't believe anything. Like, and Anna's right, you'd be a ridiculous sucker to believe, like, well, I mean, not only has he not taken a dollar away, he's rushed them several billion dollars already around Congress, and he wants to send him another $14 billion without a nickel off that number, okay? You better give Israel the whole $14 billion. But here's nice words that I don't mean that never come to fruition, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Okay, if you're a total and utter sucker, you would believe that. But the rest of us care about action and numbers. Don't tell me that you're criticizing Israel and then say, I'm gonna give them $14 billion more to do more of this. Anyone who's in favor of that aid package, Republican and Democrat, are monsters and genocide deniers and genocide enablers. Every single one of them, which is about 100% of the Republican Party and about 80% of the Democratic Party.
When we come back from the break, we'll talk a little bit about Donald Trump's statements about abortion, which managed to upset members of both sides of the political aisle. So we've got that and more. And then later in the show, we'll also talk about his fundraiser with billion-dollar donors, or billionaire donors, I should say. He talked about his tax plan, and he talked about some other issues that are worth getting into. So don't miss it. We'll be right back.
Back on TYT, Cenk, Anna, MJ McQuillan, and Zachary Taylor. They just joined by hitting the join button below. You could also upgrade through there. That also counts and makes a big difference. Anna's Tommy Gun's back. Gifted 5 memberships, now an awesome member that's part of the TYT community. And speaking of which, Little Mac McGee, gifted 5 on Twitch, has been an awesome member for a long time. All right, Anna.
We've got some Trump news from the weekend. Let's get right to it.
It must be remembered that the Democrats are the radical ones on this position because they support abortion up to and even beyond the 9th month. The concept of having an abortion in the later months and even execution after birth, and that's exactly what it is. The baby is born, the baby is executed after birth, is unacceptable, and almost everyone agrees with that.
Now, the only thing that's accurate about the insane statement you just heard from Donald Trump is that he is correct that most people agree executing babies is bad.
Now, well, okay, low bar.
Okay. Good thing it's not actually happening, despite the fear mongering that you might hear from conservatives on the matter. We'll get to that in just a moment. But we're gonna hear how Trump believes that abortion policy should be handled on a state level. And in his statement, he managed to upset members of both sides of the political aisle, which is fun. Love to hear it. First, we have to disprove the claim, though, that abortions are taking place after the 9th month of pregnancy, which means that the baby is born and it is thus a living, breathing, viable human being, and aborting it would mean killing it, murdering it, and that's a crime in most states. I don't know about some blue cities, but nonetheless, I'm kidding, although I don't know. Let's get to this. So look, again, killing a baby after it's born is considered murder, okay? Abortion is literally defined as the deliberate termination of a pregnancy. A pregnancy is when a fetus is inside the body of the woman, inside the womb of the woman, okay? A baby that is born is a baby, not a pregnancy.
Yeah, look, you gotta explain it in simple language, because a lot of right wingers really do believe this. They believe it with all their heart. They say, oh, Governor Northman or whatever his name is. I don't think I got that right. Anyway, in Virginia, and on a radio show, they asked him, and he said something about after the delivery. We got you, they all do it. They're killing the babies afterwards. Guys, look.
It's murder. Yeah, That is not happening.
It's happened a total of 0 times in the country. 0. So look, you watch this show over an extended period of time, you see us constantly saying, no, wait, the Democrats aren't right about this. Even the left is not right about this. And Trump, by the way, the bloodbath comment recently as one of hundreds of examples. He said it in an economic context. He didn't say it in a violent context. Mm-hmm. We're fair and honest on this show.
In fact, let me be clear about something, okay? So after Lance from the Serfs went on Tim Pool's show and embarrassed himself by basically saying that late term abortions of healthy fetuses and healthy pregnancies should be allowed to be aborted, I spoke out against that. I'm not in favor of that. If it is a healthy pregnancy and it's late term, an abortion should not happen. Every American, with the exception of Lance from the Serfs, although he's not American, he's Canadian, feels that way, okay? The only time that late term abortions happen is when the pregnancy is a threat to the mother's life, or if there are severe abnormalities with the fetus, thus making it unviable, an unviable pregnancy.
Yeah.
Let's be very clear about that.
So let me just clarify the timing here. 0 to 24 weeks is the area in which the debate is happening.
Yes.
When should abortion be allowed and not allowed? In the last trimester, past the 24 weeks, Roe did not allow abortions, generally speaking, except for what Anna mentioned. The life of the baby or the mom is in danger, or the baby's already died in essence, right? So that's a zone that Roe did not legalize. They don't understand that. Roe made that illegal in the last trimester. Post-birth is a third area, which is not a thing, because it's post-birth. And that is why no one has ever done an abortion post-birth. It's literally not possible. You're talking about a different concept, and it's never happened. Unless someone wanted to kill their baby for other reasons, and then they just committed a murder, okay?
Right.
So please do not sound like lunatics, right-wingers, when you make up things that don't make any sense at all.
Now, in reality, abortions occurring at or after 21 weeks of gestation are incredibly rare. In fact, let's take a look at this pie chart that was put together by the Kaiser Family Foundation. And what it shows you is prior to the Dobbs decision, the vast majority of abortions actually occurred early in pregnancy, right? So according to the CDC's abortion surveillance data for 2021, the vast number of abortions, 96%, occurred at or before 15 weeks gestation, while 3% occurred from 16 to 20 weeks gestation, and just 1% of abortions were performed at or after 21 weeks. And in those instances, again, it happened due to abnormalities of the fetus, severe abnormalities, or because the pregnancy was posing a threat to the mother's life. So what's interesting is obviously Trump's lies there trigger people on the left like myself, because those lies are dangerous and it misinforms the public about the reality of late term abortions. But there are people on the right who are real salty about Trump's statements as well, because aside from his absurd attacks on Democrats, he feels that abortion should not be a national issue, that the topic should be left to the states to decide, which I also thought was really fascinating, Cenk, because yes, this has led to a lot of criticism from the far right, you know, the so-called pro-life anti-abortion groups who want this to be a national issue, who want a national ban. But it is interesting that Trump on one hand is fear-mongering about late-term abortions and abortions happening after the baby is born, but he feels that that should be a state's issue.
Yeah, that's very interesting, because think out the logic, guys. If you're a Trump fan, think out the logic. So he's saying, oh my God, you're executing the babies, but I'm gonna leave that to the states. Wait, if you told me, hey, they're executing, pick a random ethnicity, they're executing Asians in Tennessee, I'm not gonna say, well, it's a straight rights issue.
Insane.
So, okay, so you don't think they're executing babies, obviously.
Yeah.
Obviously, right? Because then it would be a states rights issue. I don't think it would be a states rights issue. If you told me they're actually doing post-birth abortions in any state or any city in America, I would say that is not a states rights issue. They should be arrested. Whoever did that should definitely be arrested and tried for murder, because it is murder. So this is all nonsense. But I want you to focus on one other thing that Anna just mentioned. Abortions past 21 weeks is only 1%. So they got rid of Roe v. Wade for 1% of the abortions?
No, they got rid of Roe v. Wade because groups like the Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America group, they want to ban all abortions.
Exactly. Okay, period.
Yeah, and they're actually the saltiest toward Trump's unwillingness to fight for a national abortion ban, and understand why. First of all, I don't think Trump has any real connection or concern about abortions, right? This is all political maneuvering for him. And he understands how toxic this issue has been for Republicans. Ever since the reversal of Roe, the Republican Party has suffered electorally. There was supposed to be a red wave during the midterm elections. Part of the reason why there wasn't a red wave during the midterms is because voters were galvanized over the destruction of reproductive rights in America. And they turned up to vote, and they voted for Democratic candidates over Republican candidates. And so the Republican Party knows how toxic this issue is. Trump is trying to do a balancing act here. And so his form of a balancing act is, let me just get off of it. It's a states' rights issue. I'm not going to keep fighting for more restrictions on a national level for reproductive rights. With that said, though, let me go to a statement from Susan B. Anthony, Pro-Life America. This is graphic 5. We are deeply disappointed in President Trump's position. Unborn children and their mothers deserve national protections and national advocacy from the brutality of the abortion industry. The Dobbs decision clearly allows both states and Congress to act. Well, Marjorie Dannenfelser, Congress is not going to act on this because Republicans know it's a political liability. Even Sean Hannity on Fox News, not once but twice, urge Republicans to get the hell off this topic. He said, I'm very pro-life myself, but this is a political loser. We need to get off this immediately.
And as we showed you last week, there was a hilarious moment where Sean Hannity says that, and then a pollster he has on it says, look, I think the Republicans should really be arguing for allowing abortions under 24 weeks, but definitely not past 24 weeks. That's Roe v. Wade. Mm-hmm. So now the Republicans are back to Roe v. Wade. Because they never meant it anyway. Sean Hannity doesn't care about abortions at all. He said, I'm pretty pro-life. Really? You're only pretty pro-life? I remember you being a zealot before. Because they were using it just to get tax cuts for the rich. Now it's hurting their ability to get tax cuts for the rich. Now all of a sudden they're like, yeah, Roe, we meant 24 weeks. Yeah, that's what we meant. So that's why Trump is trying to thread the needle here. So he wants to say, remember, Democrats are still baby killers. They're executing babies, but don't vote against me. Don't vote against me based on abortion. I'll let you have any abortion you want. I don't really care, but I get credit for changing the Supreme Court to 6-3 and overturning Roe v. Wade. So all the right wingers vote for me and everybody in the middle vote for me. You know what that is? A standard greasy politician.
100%. Now, the Susan B. Anthony organization isn't the only group that's angry with Donald Trump. Apparently, there are some lawmakers who are angry with Donald Trump as well. And it has to do with the statement he makes here.
Many people have asked me what my position is on abortion and abortion rights, especially since I was proudly the person responsible for the ending of something that all legal scholars, both sides, wanted and in fact demanded be ended. Roe v. Wade. They wanted it ended. My view is now that we have abortion where everybody wanted it from a legal standpoint, the states will determine by vote or legislation or perhaps both. And whatever they decide must be the law of the land. In this case, the law of the state. Many states will be different. Many will have a different number of weeks, or some will have more conservative than others, and that's what they will be. At the end of the day, this is all about the will of the people. You must follow your heart or, in many cases, your religion or your faith.
Former President Donald Trump understands the political liability associated with pursuing a national abortion ban, which is why he put out a statement indicating that he is not going to pursue a national abortion ban and feels that the issue should be left up to the states. Well, Senator Lindsey Graham disagrees. And now this has led to quite a tiff between Graham and Donald Trump. Now, Lindsey Graham on X wrote that, "I respectfully disagree with President Trump's statement that abortion is a state's rights issue. Dobbs does not require that conclusion legally. And the pro-life movement has always been about the well-being of the unborn child, not geography." Graham continued by saying, "The state's rights only rationale today runs contrary to an American consensus that would limit late term abortions and will age about as well as the Dred Scott decision." Was this guy not around during the midterms? Was he not around during the midterms? Lindsey Graham totally in the dark about how unbelievably popular what he's advocating for really is.
Unpopular.
I'm sorry, unpopular. That's what I meant.
So I'll just address that real quick. He's from South Carolina. In South Carolina, he might have a different motivation than the other politicians, where it's even more right wing in that state. And so he might be looking at his polling numbers and seeing that they want to really push for a 15-week ban among his primary voters. But calling it like the Dred Scott decision is a heavy insult to Trump. He no like that.
Oh, he no like that. And you're about to see how much he dislikes it in just a moment. But let me finish reading that second tweet where he says that, and he lies, that the science is clear. A child at 15 weeks is well developed and is capable of feeling pain.
Not true.
Not true. The science conclusively establishes that a human fetus does not have the capacity to experience pain until after at least 24 to 25 weeks. Every major medical organization that has examined this issue and peer-reviewed studies on the matter have consistently reached the conclusion that abortion before this point does not result in the perception of pain in a fetus. Nonetheless, Graham went on to say that he will continue to advocate for a national minimum standard limiting abortion at 15 weeks. Mike Pence also criticized Donald Trump, saying that his repeat on the right to life is a slap in the face to the millions of pro-life Americans who voted for him in 2016 and 2020. Now, I want to go back to Lindsey Graham, though, because Donald Trump did not take kindly to what Lindsey Graham had to say. And he put out a lengthy statement on Truth Social. Just bear with me as I try to get through the lengthy statement. He wrote, "Senator Lindsey Graham is doing a great disservice to the Republican Party and to our country. At first, he wanted no abortions under any circumstances. Then he was up to 6 weeks where you're allowed abortion. Now he's up to 15 weeks where you're allowed abortion. But what he doesn't understand, or perhaps he does, is the radical left Democrats who are destroying our country will never approve anything that he or the Republicans want. They love this issue. I don't love this issue. This is an awful issue to politicize because we're talking about like women's lives and their health and, you know, reproductive health care being available to them. But let me continue. They love this issue, meaning the left. They want to keep it going for as long as Republicans will allow them to do so. Terminating Roe v. Wade was, according to all legal scholars, a great event. But sometimes with great events come difficulties. Many good Republicans lost elections because of this issue. And people like Lindsey Graham that are unrelenting are handing Democrats their dream of the House, Senate, and perhaps even the presidency. When the Supreme Court had the courage to do the right thing legally and terminate Roe v. Wade, all of those people, including Lindsey Graham and Marjorie Dannenfelser of Susan B. Anthony, that were hardliners, one day after the victory were gone and of absolutely no help. As the Democrats staged rallies and won elections they should never have won. Lindsey, Marjorie, and others fought for years unsuccessfully until I came along and got the job done. Then they were gone, never to be heard from again until now. And then my personal favorite, a post later, Trump writes, "I blame myself for Lindsey Graham because the only reason he won in the great state of South Carolina is because I endorsed him."
He's such a weirdo.
I'll allow it.
That might be relatively true. Yeah. Lindsey Graham has won many races before Donald Trump came around. But at this point, the reason Graham usually grovels to him around election time, and actually for 90% of the time, that's why we're surprised by this story, is because if he gets in the, is not in the good grace of Donald Trump, he will be eliminated. in the South Carolina primary. Trump definitely has the power to do that, and Lindsey Graham knows that. All right, Trump amuses me because he says things like, they want abortion, not an abortion, just abortion, and the abortion is capitalized.
Yeah.
Why, no one knows. Okay, but there was one thing he said that was very wrong, other than the insults and all the factual misstatements, etc. But in terms of politics, he says, and the Democrats will never agree to what you want anyway, Lindsey Graham, so this isn't really a realistic issue. That's not true. And here's what I mean by that. Not that the Democrats wouldn't agree or would agree with them on abortion, but they might not need them. Remember, if Trump wins, he's probably bringing some coattails along with him. Mm-hmm. So winning the House, they already have the House. Holding it is not that difficult. Winning the Senate is actually relatively easy this time around because a lot of Democratic seats are up. So if they have the Senate, you think they're going to worry about the parliamentarian? You're never going to hear about the parliamentarian again. So yeah, if House, Senate, Trump, they'll pass an anti-abortion bill that is 15 weeks, 6 weeks, something along those lines. And go, so what? So what? Then you shouldn't have voted for us. Ha ha, you voted for us. They'll pass a massive tax cut for the rich, and they might pass 6 week, I think is even undoable for the Republicans, but 15 week ban. And then what is Trump going to do? Veto it? No way. So yes, if you vote for Trump, you're definitely risking abortion being limited nationwide, even though he says that that's not the case. So look, Anna, does he care one way or another on the actual policy? We all know absolutely not, right?
No, right, yes.
All he cares about is the politics and his self-interest, right? I mean,
I don't think that there is a political will among Republican lawmakers in Congress, among the majority of Republican lawmakers in Congress, to pursue a national ban. And I don't say that because, oh, they care about, you know, the well-being of women in the country. No. Everything they do is a political calculation. And they've been badly burned by this issue. Mm-hmm. And they don't want to touch it anymore.
Yeah, again, though, with Lindsey Graham and the other groups, you see, it kind of depends. It depends on if they're zealots. It depends on a bunch of things, right? Mm-hmm. So we'll see how it plays out. I wouldn't take a risk on it by putting Trump into office. That's for goddamn sure, okay? In my opinion. But all right, two more things real quick. Lindsey Graham says, this is not an issue that should be decided by geography. This is the same guy and the same party that insisted on states' rights for my entire life. Now states' rights is just a matter of geography. I want to ban everything nationally now that we're going to be in charge. Okay, so you never meant states' rights. All states' rights meant is we want to discriminate against black people. And if you didn't know that that's what states' rights meant for the right wing, hello, welcome to America. Nice to have you here. Okay, and then finally, if you look at that findings by all the meta studies on science and say, and because I'm saying this, I can see right wingers saying this, oh, isn't it convenient that the scientists declare that they don't get pain until after 24 weeks in gestation? No, brothers, it's not convenient. The reason that you pick 24 weeks is because it's almost impossible to be viable before 24 weeks, and there's no pain receptors before 24 weeks, because they're actually forming.
They're still developing.
They're not a human being yet. They're still developing in the womb. They develop the pain receptors later. Like you've been told a bill of goods about, oh, they get a heartbeat right away at 6 weeks. No, that is not a heart has four chambers, pumps blood. It's not even close to a heart. A heart develops much later in the pregnancy. So you pick 24 weeks because of viability and pain receptors and all the science around pregnancies. But if you don't care about science and you just want to control women's bodies, you're going to vote right wing anyway and just be honest about it. But you're not, it's not because of the pain or the heart of a zygote inside the womb.
All right, we got to take a break. When we come back for the second hour of the show, we'll talk a little bit about Donald Trump's fundraiser with billionaire donors over the weekend. He also weighed in on immigration, so we'll talk about that as well. Lots to get to, don't miss it. We'll be right back.
God bless the United States.